So, man, it took me forever to find that record button, Schweitz. you can attest to that. I think it took me like a good minute. Because every time that Zoom has an update, they add like a new icon to the bottom menu bar. It's like, just leave the record button in that little sweet spot. Just leave it in the middle. Make it so easy. Don't hide it. I don't care about all this other stuff.
They have to keep doing things. They have to make it look like they're doing stuff.
They have to justify what they're charging us for this. Oh my gosh. But also, it's like, when you're competing against Microsoft Teams, do you really have to try that hard?
No. Microsoft Teams doesn't give a fuck about Zoom.
Exactly. So it's like, I don't know. I'm trying to decide who is the Pepsi and who is the Coca-Cola in this thing. And
I mean, I think technically Microsoft Teams was Skype. Microsoft bought Skype and then integrated it into Microsoft Teams.
So is this like a Sierra Mist Starry situation?
Maybe it's, what is it? Hydrox cookies versus Oreos. Hydrox were first and then Oreos came after them, but Oreos took over. Because that was always the comment during the pandemic, is I can't believe Skype dropped the ball on this. And it's like, no, Skype was just acquired and they don't care about it this way. They care about the Teams aspect.
I guess that's more apt, but yeah. Welcome everybody to a surprise episode of LTC, because we're actually, that's the surprise. So we're not dead yet, but
we're getting there.
We'll see what happens. We, against our better judgments, we keep on doing this thing, and people listen. People
to do a song for you now that's kind of a special little song to me. A lot of folks that follow my career know that I write a lot of sad songs, and this one is absolutely pitiful. It's true. It's a story about a little girl and her puppy dog, and I call it Me and Little Andy.
There's conversation, but it seems like people are still listening.
My name is Sandy, and this here is my puppy dog, and his name is Little Andy. Standing in the bitter cold in just a ragged
dress. I feel like every time in the last 4 or 5 episodes that we released, always giving a very heartfelt thank you to the listeners. So, hi Andy, hi.
Ain't you got an extra bed for me?
All 3 of you.
Hey guys, so.
I don't know all of them by name by now. When we post this, please just write your name in the bottom if you listen, so we know who you are.
Yeah, taking attendance, taking it back to elementary school with this one. So we do have a few topics that we kind of discussed beforehand, and I guess we should start off with, I guess, the most shocking breaking show news, which was that Stu was tempted to become the program director at WFAN. So that had to have been that weekend, or that it felt like a weekend, but like those couple of shows that he went up there to New York, and also how he kind of just like, I don't think there was, he did not give Billy or any of them, maybe Dan, but it, that when he did that guest hosting stuff, it did not appear like he gave them much notice that he was doing it. And it kind of took everybody kind of like somewhat by surprise, but like, I'm trying to remember, and Dan's reaction was kind of like, this is just who Stugatz is. And like, that's about it. And yeah, but
definitely a bit of a surprise. I think this has been going on for a bit because those kind of hires don't happen that quickly. But I do think once it got to a certain point, you know, I think Stugatz just like getting pampered a bit and people trying to sell to him. I don't think he was ever going to take it unless it was like, he knows what that work is. He's not going to do that anymore. You know?
Yeah. And does that offer, like, he must find it flattering that, you know, a traditional media thinks that he has, that his career, his name, everything that he does has enough, like it's well known enough that if they steal him or bring him over from Meadowlark, that it will impact their listenership. And, you know, because honestly, like, I don't know if WFAN is struggling or if they are just kind of want something a little bit different than traditional New York sports talk, and they want some of the like established zany hijinks or like the stuff that happens on the show. But I think if he goes, would it tear at the fabric of like of the show as we know it? Because he is like so heavily dependent on Billy, and how much, like, since the pandemic, well, since leaving ESPN, how much Billy has pushed the success of God Bless Football and Stupati, well, God Bless Football in particular. So if he takes this job, he's absolutely trying to like poach people from Meadowlark, not just the people that we hear, but probably like background people as well, because we know, like, he could have, obviously he would take Mikey A, but definitely like he would be targeting Billy, and if not, then he's going to Mike. Maybe even trying to, like, now that Witty's in New York, maybe he would just be like, Witty, buddy, WFAN.
Exactly. Yeah, you go after who you know and who you trust, and he trusts all of them.
Can we get a couple hits from the World Cup and the Olympics, buddy? And then it just ends up, soccer is dead in America.
Right. Well, when you were just talking, I was just thinking, Stugatz is less replaceable than Dan. I think Dan is more replaceable than Stugatz, because Dan is, you know, just interacting with everybody. He's not really playing a character. He does certain things and has control, but like nobody can replace Stugatz's character work. Nobody can be that swarmy. Like, that's taken years for him to build up like that. And like the way that the rest of the group interacts with him, and, you know, they don't trust him, and still he gets away with things. Like, that is unique to him.
Yeah,
because like Izzy example could come in for a few days with Stugatz and work the room similar to Dan. He can push off of things. He wouldn't necessarily get pissed at Cody the same way. He wouldn't get aggravated, but I, you know, as you were talking, it's like, actually Stugatz is, you know, for what that show is, he is less replaceable than Dan, I think.
There, yeah, because there are there's people that could fill in, but I don't, like, a permanent fixture that gives you back what Stu was delivering, that would be that's incredibly difficult to replace, because my automatic thought went to a mean. And a mean, like, doesn't have a lot of the characteristics of Stu. But he's doing 10,000 things, and it wouldn't be Greg, because, you know, as well, I think in like a slow period right now, he could handle it, but he would, I would think he would lose a lot of his lovability and popularity if he was there every single day, because it's like, oh, here they come again with the hard network out or like some other stuff, you know. Yeah, it wouldn't fit the same, and nobody
he would be as prepared as Stu.
Yeah, and no one else in like the rotation that they have, not just within the shipping container but outside of Meadowlark, would fit that role so perfectly. But I do wonder, like, when their negotiations, when his contract comes up, how much of this he gets to just, I need more zeros, Bimmel, skipper. What more can I expense? It's like,
and I mean, he probably does have some ownership stake, even if it's small, in Meadowlark. So there's also that component of it too.
Yeah, they've made reference to that. I think the last time was when all the equity holdings was when all the stuff with like Jeremy not being able to get like a shirt, a free shirt through the merch store. So yeah, whenever they go, if they ever decide to go public, there's a lot in it for them in that equity stake. What the breakdown is, I have no idea. But and also, as it was pointed out by many, many people, he is not gonna take on all of that work and show up. Like, his schedule is like so crafted to now the lifestyle of following his daughter's lacrosse program. If it's not following Rachel around the Midwest for Rachel. Lacrosse, it's the Grateful Dead.
Exactly. Yeah, it's he's sort of semi-retired, even though he's not retired. He sort of travels and does things the way that, you know, an empty nester would. So I can't see it happening, but it's definitely interesting, and it's interesting that he let Dan know about it, and you know, he probably wasn't so clear with Dan, but Dan was aware, and that probably wasn't great for Dan's mental health considering the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think he's, I want to say, because it's been, Lebo passed in August, 4 months. So it's almost 8 months, or around 8 months that he's passed. And I think he looks at things as through the prism of Lebo a lot of times. And you can hear it in the, even beforehand, because, you know, he was, you know, when he would reference his parents and, you know, child of exiles and freedom and stuff like that, I think he looks at things through the prism of like how Lebo looked at the world. And it's kind of like, if your heart's desire is this, or you were presented with this opportunity and outside of Meadowlark, and it kind of checks a lot of the boxes, then who am I to stand in your way? But I think even in that consideration, I think Dan does realize that how much of the show would fracture, how much of what they've built over the past 20 years and in the past 4 years as an independent company, how much of that kind of, you know, goes away. And so you do have a natural a fear of like, if Stu is gone, how much of the audience is going to stay, and how, like we were just talking, we kind of couldn't think of anybody to replace him, because I think it would just be such a, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the, it would, it's like the Kate Middleton memes. kind of.
It would change the dynamic so much that the show would feel different. I mean, the show has changed over the last, you know, however many years as they've brought on new people and people have changed out and stuff like that. And there's just, you know, when Witty came aboard, that was a different dynamic. It fit, but it was still a different dynamic. But that wasn't, you know, losing Stu is a huge dynamic change. Even if it's just him not paying attention, if it, like, there's so much comedy and content in Stu Gatz not doing anything. That, yeah, I don't think he's replaceable like that. I think the show is completely different.
Yeah, and every now and then he does get a top five list right, so we should acknowledge that. The second top five list, I was just like, okay, he's just like stretching it. I think it was just to get the sister Jean in there, but the first one was really, really good.
I think he did it backwards though, because God Sham God should have been number one. So I really think that he wrote them and read them backwards, because it would have worked better the other way. Should message Jeremy and just tell him, start, instead of doing your really lame bad jokes off in the corner, just do fake laughs and start working on your Stew impression. So if you need to fill in for him, or hell, oh, we could have Billy do fake Stew Gods, which is one of my favorites. He hasn't done that for a long time.
Yeah, he hasn't had to do that in a while. Oh. Like when he gets to wherever he's stationed in the heat arena, that some malicious heat employee or like another media member leaves him like a bag of chips and it's like, for Jeremy, you know, enjoy, something like that. Like they leave him a note.
I hope so. But I hope at least there's enough, you know, there's enough fans of the show who are at those games, you know, if it's the second or third quarter before they leave, who would, you know, could at least go buy him a bag of chips and bring it over to him while he's, you know, on his break. I think that would be, they should do that.
That was nuts, because it was, like Jessica said, oh, I was just clowning on the fact that they lost, and then someone else is like, sends the very... What also makes that photo is that as you zoom in to see him, that the quality gets worse.
Yep.
So that made, so like that very bad definition image of him with his finger in his mouth only made it worse.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm going to ask, are you someone, do you like pick at your teeth? Do you like... You lick your fingers after eating chips? What's
because, oh, yeah, I mean,
Juju and David were just, you know, disgusted by it. Just like, yeah, no, I pick at my teeth all the time.
Yeah, I it's like I know where my hands have been and I know what I've been doing. So if I'm eating and then, you know, like they gave the example, like ribs, chicken wings, tacos, whatever your, you know, finger, whatever finger foods you have. Yeah, if I feel something, I'm like, you know, if I have something under my nails or something, I may either pick at it with my nail or, you know, lick it off or like whatever. Or if I have sauce on my fingers, the same thing, you know, especially if I, you know, like don't have a napkin. Forgot to get napkins when I went to like a concession stand, or, you know, like drop my napkin on the floor if I'm at a restaurant or like whatever, right? So to me, I'm like, I feel like I'm eating off of a sterile environment, the plate itself, And then I know where my hands have been and they're only going in my mouth. So this only affects me. It's not like me and you are eating together and then I'm grabbing from your plate and doing the same thing. And, you know, as John Taffer would say, I'm cross-contaminating the area. You know, especially if I'm eating by myself, I think it's less, it's more acceptable. But also it's like situational awareness.
Jeremy was eating by himself as well, but just cameras around, it's his fault. Yeah. I mean, I have two small children who are probably filthy at any given time. I do wash my hands regularly, but also like, as of now, like I know my immune system. I know what it does right now. Like it can handle a little dirt, it can handle a little, you know, I tend to be better off than most people I know when it comes to getting sick and working through illness, and my kids seem to be better off than a lot of their schoolmates. So I'm gonna keep doing what I do.
If
I need to pick something out of my teeth, I'll pick something out of my teeth and I'll wash my hands before and after.
Greg's grandma, or his mom, that said, you got to eat a peck of dirt before you die.
Pretty sure one of my children has already done that.
Well, there you go. Accomplished. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to talk about from, like, you know, it's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah, and I haven't jumped on one of these, and I really haven't been able, but it's nice to see your face. I guess, like, the other big news from the week is obviously, you know, the OJ stuff, which we don't have to get too into that, but it is really fun to be online when somebody like him, well, there's nobody like him, but when somebody who has such a complicated history passes away and then the jokes just go crazy online, and we have pretty sick senses of humor. So, you know, all the Kardashian jokes, all the you can rest now because, you know, the killer's been found jokes, like they're all the same joke, but they all make me laugh.
Yeah, I was waiting to see like which institution, like, you know, associated with him would put out like the, because, you know, when it comes to like these things, there's someone always has a tweet that's a little bit like, you know, you're missing the big picture, like Greg with his Jerry Lee Lewis,
still
a great piano player. So I was like, it's either going to be USC or the Buffalo Bills. And nope.
It was the Heisman
Committee. It was the Heisman Committee. But, like,
I'm from Canton, Ohio, so I expect the Hall of Fame to do stuff like that, and they didn't touch it. Because they've been arguing for, like, people have been going to them for years and saying, like, take him out. And they're like, no, like, some people come to see his statue. They don't take him out for that. But, like, they understand that they're not posting that.
Yeah. Because out here in L.A., there was a, you know, there was the push to not, you know, to not display his jersey in the Coliseum and, you know, hide away the trophy, the Heisman and a bunch of stuff. And even there was a previous AD that when it was, I think one of the teams he played on was, it was going to be like one of those 40, 50 year anniversary type of things. And there was a debate of whether or not to invite him because it would just be like, if the whole team is there and he had X contribution. And it always, you know, for those types of decisions, especially when you're being pushed by big money donors from that era that want to see him, it's you know, this is just like the stupidity that we were like hearing in the news and sports talk radio about like how USC wanted him back on campus, and then at the same time their 100% ban on Reggie Bush. And
a lot of Reggie Bush jokes yesterday too.
Yeah, well, I mean, he falls into that too, because, you know, he's very much Kardashian adjacent. I did find it, you know, like you're talking about like sense of humor, when Caitlyn Jenner posted her tweet about like rotten hell, I'm pretty sure like 99% of her quote tweets to that were, you're also a killer dog. Like, you killed someone too, like, you know.
Yeah, like yours wasn't first degree, it was second degree, but it still counts.
Yeah, and you know, and also like I understand dunking on Caitlyn, because it's also like all the other activities that come with that. And you know, like, if people don't like you and you write a shitty tweet and people pile on you, it's just because they don't like you. But I also understand that her being the ex-partner of Kris Jenner, she and also I think just like the proximity of being in that area, that she had to have, either through Kris or their other friends, she had to have been told or known things that even we don't know, that have not been put out through like the books and the miniseries and the TV shows and all that stuff. So I understand that this person feels that they have intimate knowledge of just how awful OJ was to Nicole, because you know, like LAPD showing up to their home and just him being able to charm his way out of being arrested and things like that. And it's and you would think like, well, in 2024 probably not, like, you know, if it was a similar celebrity, that they would not be able to get away with that. But you know, you never know, honestly. It does depend. And
I mean, I also, one of the things that kept coming up as people were talking about this, and just like, you know, people would sort of end with, you know, at the end of the day, they also, you know, he has a family, he has children, they didn't do it, you know, they didn't do anything, so like, we do need to respect them a little bit for that. And I'm just thinking, it's like, well, some of those children don't have a mother either, so it's just like, but like, they didn't mention that part. It's like, well, how did they lose their mom? It's just, you know,
like
see, you're missing the other part of saying they have kids. I know he has kids with some other people as well, but like, I'm just like, you gotta finish that statement.
Yeah, like what is the reason that we have to be so sensitive on this topic? Oh yeah, because he, you know, he killed their mother in a very gruesome and disgusting way. And, you know, when Jessica brought that up, it does seem like that is what is lost in the conversations. It's automatically, you know, two Americas and the fractured, you know, the disparities in our justice system, and just how corrupt and I can't even say LAPD used to be, but just the corruption that exists within, that has existed and most likely continues to exist within that police agency, is like, there's just so many things. But at the end of the day, it just comes back to the fact that this guy like used to beat her relentlessly, and their inner circle knew, and that is what propelled her to divorce him, because she feared for her life, and then her fears were actualized when he killed her. And then I don't know if you get, you know, living here in Los Angeles, but like their old home in Brentwood, Rockingham, when it's, you know, someone bought it and they completely leveled it. And I think even they may have even changed the name of the street. So if you were around back then, you know where the house was, but it no longer, it has a different appearance. They have like a huge privacy hedge. They don't even have like the numbers painted on the house to avoid like looky-loos and stuff. And it's worked for the most part. But it was really weird to see like the reporters that were covering this when, you know, back in 94 and back in the 90s, like seeing them back in Brentwood and stuff like that. It just gave me like a really horrible deja vu. And then just having to see the clips, of the chase over and over again, it just brought that all back, and I just bad feelings. Yeah. But I thought it was.
Are you one of those people though that when, I mean, obviously in LA when there's a police chase, you all know about it, you all flip it on. Because every time I see that, I just think, oh, like I think OJ first, and then I think whatever's happening. Every time I click on one of those links one of you guys sends. But does that ever like trigger it, or is it different?
No, it's different because
it's a Dodge Charger now.
Yeah, or like the crazy one where the guy stole like he stole the work truck from the people's yard and like destroyed it. But no, it just, it's just a weird thing to like relive, because a few years ago, I think it was after Ezra Edelman did his documentary, and it may have been around the time that the TV show came out. It was even a plot line, a very stupid like device, in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Just because it was like the 30th and like either the 30th or the 35th anniversary, it was the thing, and they kept they just brought it up because I guess there was like a new housewife and she used to be like the ex-girlfriend of like Marcus Allen, and it was around the time that
they're just tying everything they can to it.
Yeah, I think it was when Nicole may have been having the affair with Marcus Allen or something like that. And like, so that was like her like what, like the introduction of this woman. And then it kind of just like went nowhere. But it was like, okay, even in the reality show space, you know, they have to use this tragedy for appeal and ratings, because it's also been something that, you know, I think in the Kardashians has been touched upon. It's like the reason why, you know, like you were saying, the jokes were Khloé, like, oh, her real dad, poor Khloé, you know, and I made the joke too, because how she was teased by Kim and Kourtney for not looking like them. And also when you look at pictures of her and Sydney, there is a striking resemblance. So
if she was the daughter of OJ, she'd be a much better athlete than her sisters. I've seen what Robert Kardashian looks like.
Yeah, and it was also, I think there was one, like there was a story arc or something where it had to do with like DNA testing. Mm-hmm. And I think it may have been specific to this. And she, like,
if the Moesha started 5 years earlier and they made the developments, because like a lot of DNA testing and stuff they made developments in because of like paternity tests and that kind of stuff with the Maury show, like, just think they would have been able to figure this out even easier.
Yeah, but it's just like when everything starts intersecting, it's, yeah. You know, like they had Carl Douglas on, and at the same time they have Stan, and they bring up how his brother was coaching in the, you know, Jeff Van Gundy was coaching the Knicks in that
in
the finals playoff, and they cut in, and it's just like, oh, even there, there's like that. I mean, obviously, if they had gotten
there's Jeff, a connection.
Yeah, if they had gotten Jeff, it would have been like much more like right in your face. Yeah, no, but the proximity there, you know,
obviously, yeah, like they were just having Stan on for Stan, and then that news broke, so they had to get Carl in, and Stan was already in the waiting room. Like that's, it's just interesting to. Yeah, it's such a pivotal event in, you know, in U.S. history, especially like in L.A. and in sports, and there's so many crossovers. It was such a, you know, the timing of it, you know, as people point out, it's like it's before the internet was the internet.
Because that's also what started like court.
But it was
court.
After. Yeah,
that started like court TV was like kind of took off, and you started to see like. Like I remember that that was like the big thing, just and like just, you know, the constant coverage. I remember that all the TV stations had it here, and whatever was your usual program you didn't have. So it's like coming home from school and not being able to watch cartoons, and just like seeing Marsha, you know, and Chris Darden and Johnny Cochran and, you know, Shapiro and all that stuff. I mean, like seeing them on your TV and then also when you would watch like Saturday Night Live or In Living Color, them being parodied, especially like Marsha with like the differing hairstyles and everything. You're like, oh my gosh.
Somebody reposted the Tim Meadows sketch, the OJ sketch recently. Have you seen that where he's on a teleprompter and he's, you know, calling the game, and
he writes, "I did it."
It's still one of the funniest sketches.
And the Norm, the ESPYs,
the Norm McDonald stuff is phenomenal. Just watching everyone's reaction in those clips when he tells that joke, they Ken Griffey Jr.'s in the shot when they do the crowd shot, and he's just shaking his head, like just blown away that somebody said it. Transition.
But still, great in the Hertz commercials. I think maybe like 10 years ago or maybe longer than that, I did see one of the Naked Gun movies, and
I watched one that I hadn't seen before, because I'd seen them, but I hadn't seen them in many years. I watched them a few years, like within the last 5 years, I watched them, and it's just like, oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm like, I get it. I saw it, and I was, you know, I'm like, oh, I totally get why he was able to capitalize on everything. And then at the end, that was like,
he apparently had his own production company too, and like in the 80s, like he was like really early. Like Bill Simmons was talking about that today. He did a bunch of the stuff, and he was like way ahead, like just because he was in LA, like he could do a production company. He had
and being neighbors with like people in the business, and
everyone wanted to. Yeah, and he ran that portion of town for a while.
Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, like the parallels that come with it, because now that's what like a lot of like front facing, you know, the GOATs or the, you know, people that are synonymous in their sport or like very you know, prove it, you know, champions in the sport. That's like what they strive to be. It's what you see with LeBron and Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes and the Kelseys with, you know, with their podcasts and, you know, their interest into not just being a one-dimensional figure, but also like trying to conquer, you know, I sound like Dan here, but trying to like conquer entertainment and all these other avenues. And what being famous and being influential, what it brings to them. And, you know, back in his time, you had to be here. It's either LA or New York to establish that. And now you could be pretty much anywhere and the opportunities come to you. You can set up your media empire. You know, I mean, look at Peyton and Eli Manning, like how they're doing it, you know?
They're, you know, it was when Kawhi came to Toronto, you know, I think most people knew that he was not going to stay past 1 year.
Right.
But a big talk radio thing here was that it is a large media market. It's a national media market as well for your sport. You know, they're going to show coast to coast. They show the Raptors games. And you could get everything. Like if a player of his caliber wanted to come here, and you know, hockey's a little different just because there's more teams. But like if the top baseball player wanted to come here, if Shohei wanted to come here.
Well, yeah, you guys had that like little, what is it, like a couple hours of like, Ohtani's gonna be a Blue Jay.
He wasn't gonna be a Blue Jay. No, I don't think. I mean, like that was a bit weird, but I'm just saying, you could set up the media here, but you would run the country, like, and that's what always is interesting to me. It's like there's more power in LA because of the volume of it, but like you could, you know, there was a lot of talk with Kawhi. It's like if he stayed here, he would get more endorsements than he would in the States.
So if there was like
because he would still get the U.S. endorsements, he would just get all of the Canadian brands, like, and just it'd be complicated as hell for his taxes, but he could. But they always talk about that, especially like there were some hockey players that didn't come here that, you know, once I think Stamkos, they thought he was going to come here and they were going to essentially give him a, you know, they were going to work it so behind the scenes, so they essentially were going to give him like $100 million and he didn't want to do it.
So like if Toronto had a WNBA franchise, and
I'm
hoping
that happens.
And they had the opportunity to draft Caitlin, she would just like rule Canada.
Yeah, like, well, if an established superstar in their prime chooses to come here, like it just like, because that's also a big thing. It's like if you get drafted here, that's one thing, but if you choose to stay.
But her bringing her Iowa resume and seeing already like I wanted to get tickets to see the Fever play the Sparks here in Los Angeles, and one of those games, the ticket price for that, because they're going to be playing at Long Beach State, just because of, you know, the NBA schedule and whatever's going on at Crypto, they were $20 each. That is the only game so far that the Sparks have sold out of. They have not chosen to move that game. It's the Friday before Memorial Day. They have not elected, like the Aces, to seek out a bigger venue like the Coliseum or BMO Stadium or, you know, SoFi Dodger Stadium. Dodger Stadium would be really, really hard. But like somewhere in that capacity to hold the eyeballs and to get the money and everything. And now on the secondary market, the cheapest tickets I found, and it's still, you know, it's, they were like $150. So to go from 20 to 150 is, that's a pretty huge markup,
yeah,
you know,
because
when you consider, and I think like the most I saw, I was like, oh my gosh, like, because this is capitalism, this is capitalizing on the opportunity. I think I saw some going for like $700. I'm like, I don't think anybody has ever paid $700 to watch anything at the Long Beach Pyramid. That is impossible. So
no, it's awesome, it's great. I'm so like happy for that. I really hope Toronto gets a WNBA team. It does make sense to expand here. I don't know if they'll do it. I think, well, I guess they do the NBA, or like, it just, there's complications with coming here, but because there's complications going anywhere. But yeah, I do hope they come here because they need to. They're not on TV as much here because they're not a team here. They've been putting them on more, but there's not yet. So I hope they do. Because, like, especially, like, I mean, I have small kids. I really like watching the women's game with them just because it's obviously it's a bit of a different style, but there's just, I can show my kids. It's easier to explain to my kids what's going on in some of those games. It's easier to show the expression. It's easier to, you know, they're not.
You don't have to worry about a fight breaking out. Well, no, wait. I'm not remembering LSU South Carolina. Never mind.
It's just I find it's much more like there's much more fundamentals because they're not as big. There is more passing. There is more shooting. There's more technique. There's just different things that are highlighted. It's easier to get a kid excited about because my son doesn't understand that it's difficult to dunk a basketball if he watches everyone do it. But like seeing everyone pass the ball is really exciting to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's going to be, the draft is on Monday. WNBA draft is on Monday. I mean, obviously number one, we know who it's going to be. It's going to be Caitlin to the Indiana Fever. LA Sparks have the number two pick. And I'm just really trying to wrap myself around the idea of Cameron Brink. I have biases against Stanford, which is really weird because Neko Gimeke and Sinead are some of my favorite players. Yeah. And they're Stanford and Otero.
Is she gonna go or Cardozo?
I wanted Angel Reese and I, because they have number two and number four, and I wanted Angel and I wanted Camilla, and it seems like the goddamn Chicago Sky might get Camilla Cardozo, and I, or they might get Angel. I'm just like, whoever gets them, I'm gonna hate you. So I'm just preparing myself. I'm gonna just try to be like, I'm so happy, but these are not the ladies I wanted. So Monday's gonna be tough for me. I don't really trust the Sparks a whole lot with their basketball decision making. Blame that on Derek Fisher, and I have a right to. He totally sucks. Don't put him in charge of shit. Matt Barnes was right to try to beat him up, but that's a completely different story. Salute to that possum, though. I love that. He said something along the lines in that video of when the possum broke into his kitchen. He's like, I ain't scared of no man. He's like, but I don't fuck with animals. And he's like, somebody said to use water. And then he sprays, like, he gets from his sink. And he starts throwing water and it agitates the possum. He's like, whoever the fuck said that? He got so mad because it just agitated the animal. It didn't work.
It's like the people that read, you know, oh, if you put your phone in the microwave, it'll charge faster. And then they just have a picture of a blown up microwave. And there's like, fuck you at the end. Like, I love when people give the wrong input.
Oh, that was a very good internet. Do you have anything else any other topics or anything else to expand upon?
If you're not watching Shogun, go watch Shogun. That's my main thing to add. My life is pretty boring. My kids are adorable. They say what's up.
Aw.
As you can see, the beautiful balloons behind me, we had a birthday in the house. So the little girl turned 3. So still recovering from that party on the weekend because I'm old now.
Washed king.
I've been washed for 20 years.
Whew. Well, then, as we close our episode, we did want to acknowledge the passing of a Dan Le Batard show fan and supporter of Lauer After Hours, which was Craig. So I don't know how many of you may have followed Craig on Twitter, or if you were first learned of him through the in the pandemic when Dan read the letter that he sent to the show detailing his vacation in Miami, in which he was drugged while he was at like a nightclub, and he ended up like he peed himself or he pooped himself, and it was his own and I think he had other clothes, but because he was under the influence, he couldn't get back to his hotel room to change. So he sends in the story, and then I believe he was on a Mystery Crate episode also with like Goat Piss Mike, and they talked about this experience because the connection with Goat Piss Mike is the one that he had asked Ron that question about the goats drinking their pee before they have sex or something like that. And also, of course, Go Piss Mike, he did a March Sadness tournament. He was the voice of that a couple of years ago.
That is how Go Piss got his name, Go Piss, right?
Yeah, because of that question that he asked Ron. So, you know, he was also someone that he was a huge fan of Katie Nolan's and Sarah Spain's, and, you know, he found a lot of comfort in the show and in these people within the show universe when his health was really bad and he was in the hospital, and he through them he found the inspiration, something to look forward at every day and to want to like push through his illnesses and get better. And I remember there was a one time where Sarah Spain she started doing like these Zoom conversations, these motivational things, and he would join, and he would always just be like, you know, he would just be like, I really needed that, thank you, can't wait to talk to you guys, and, you know, thank you, Sarah, and stuff like that. And just, you know, I want to say in like the last couple of months, if not less, it seemed like he was on the decline again. And then a couple weeks ago he was in hospice, and he had been in hospice before, and, you know, through some miracle it wasn't his time yet, and he gets to come back home and kind of go through this, you know, go through the experience of living and fighting a little bit more. And then this time it was just Craig's time, unfortunately. And, you know, to read the tweet from Goat Piss Mike earlier this week, and it just really made me sad, because I know that, like, Craig, when he would tweet about things, it was brutally honest. Sometimes it was things that were very difficult to read, very emotional. And, you know, when he was like on a high side, things were going really great, you could see that in his words and how he was interacting with people. When he was in a, you know, unhappy or struggling, his interactions reflected that. You know, sometimes I would get a reply or a DM, and I would just be like, hey, are you okay, you know? Or I would just be like, I'm not taking it personal, because by now I kind of like understood kind of things. And I'm like, I'm not going to pile on. I'm not going to, you know, but I am going to just be like, it's going to be okay, you know, stuff like that. And so I just did want to acknowledge his passing and send condolences to Mike and to Craig's family, because um like I said, it just seemed that it in his low moments, he needed something to believe in or something to give him hope, and it seemed like the Levitard show and a lot of the people in that universe brought that to him. And like I remember I posted something when I was re-listening to Cinephobe, and I was like, ooh, I've made it to Sister Act 2. And he's like, I love this movie so much. When I was in the hospital, I watched it almost every day and I drove the nurses sick. He's like, I love Whoopi Goldberg. He's like, excellent movie. He's like, who doesn't love this movie? And I'm just like, I'm like, don't listen to this podcast. Don't listen to the review of this one. But it just is really hard to want to say the nice things about people when you are like, shit, I could have done this days ago, weeks ago.
I think you did a great job saying that. I don't really have too much to add. I didn't know Craig that well. I messaged with him a few times a couple years ago, just because we realized we at some point lived in a similar area and sort of compared notes for a second. But yeah, you could tell by just his social media presence and whatnot that he was a real, you know, where we all came together because we're fans of the show and we're fans of some of these sports media people, and there wasn't a bigger fan than him. It might not have always shown, you know, he might not have always acted on it, but he was, you know, a diehard. And you know, it's sad when, you know, when stuff like this happens. It's unfortunately not the first person we've lost either. So, you know, I hope he's resting well. Hope he's kicking OJ in the nuts.
Ooh, no, because that implies that Craig.
Well, they're both waiting, and then he's going up, one's going down. You know, they're passing each other, so he's just kicking him on the nuts on the way by.
Oh, okay. I was like, no. They're not with Art Briles. Craig is not for sure. He is not. But I, yeah, like you're saying, it's like a lobby. So it's like the literal escalator going up and going down, and Craig is like, just I'm gonna wait right here. Yeah, it's like those YouTube pranksters where they try to like do something and then like fuck around and find out. So he's just like, I'm gonna take, you know what?
Yeah.
He's seeing his shot and he took it, but most definitely, I just want to express, you know, just thoughts of comfort and sympathy for his friends, his loved ones. And yeah, I don't, you know, it just, like you said, it sucks. And like you said, hopefully he is resting and he did get to kick OJ in the nuts. And that is going to do it for another rambling, heartfelt
therapy session.
Yeah, just, you know what, laughter the club. I don't know when we stopped. I don't know if we were ever like a club, but or where the laughter went, but it didn't. Maybe I think we laughed in this episode and we ended kind of heavy and a little bit awkward, but you know, such is life. We can't always just like get the show bits in, you know. But
and you know it.
Nice hat, asshole.
This is when you stop the episode.
I can't find the stop button. Stupid Zoom. God knew little Andy would be lonesome forever. Now Sandy and her puppy dog won't ever be alone. Ain't you got no gingerbread? Ain't you got no